This is Film Center, your number one show for real entertainment industry news. No fluff, all facts. Now, here are your anchors, Derek Johnson II and Nicholas Killian.
Hey, welcome to Film Center. My name's Derek Johnson II.
I'm Nicholas Killian.
And today we have a special guest. We're here with
Ryan Padilla.
Ryan, how you doing?
Great. Happy to be here. Happy to discuss things with you guys.
Awesome.
First of all, thank you so much for driving the hour and a half it took you to get here.
Yeah, we, as a mobile show, we probably should just went somewhere closer to him. I don't think he knew this was a mobile. We could do mobile. Next time we'll be closer to you.
I'll be sure to write that in the next email.
Hey,
no, it was nothing. I was happy to do this. I had space in the schedule. It all worked out. I'm happy to be a part of the project. Happy to be here and contribute.
Ryan, you want to tell us a little bit about where you're from?
Yeah, L.A. born and raised.
Oh, a native.
Yep,
it seems rare around here.
Honestly, I get that all the time, especially just hanging out in L.A. and doing actory things, going to actory events. Everyone's like, where are you from? Where are you from? I'm like, I'm from L.A. What?
Where in L.A.?
Family's originally from Boyle Heights, so East L.A. And then we moved out to Walnut, which is by West Covina Diamond Bar, if you're familiar. It's right on the outskirts of L.A. County, about like 45 minutes east of downtown. No traffic.
What some people don't understand is that, because my parents are, they live in Tennessee.
Okay.
And I always had to tell them, like, they're like, oh, is this close to you? This is in L.A. And I was like, just because it's in L.A. doesn't mean, but you live in L.A. L.A. is one of the biggest places you will go.
We have cities within our city.
Yeah. My mom thinks L.A. is just California. Like,
isn't
whenever
it?
It is, let's be honest here. Like, there's SF and then there's LA. That's California.
She doesn't really understand, because when we were having all those earthquakes in Central California back a couple of years ago, I'd always get phone calls at 8 o'clock in the morning being like, are you okay? And I was like, what are you talking about? Oh, I heard this earthquake. And I was like, Mom, that's 300 miles away from me. And she was like, so you're okay? Yeah, Mom. I heard it was in Los Angeles. It was in California, like near Los Angeles. I was like,
That could be anything.
That could be anywhere, yeah, Mom.
Exactly. That could be anything.
Granted, we did have a few the last year here in SoCal, and I remember waking up to one. It wasn't even bad. I had to wake up restroom break.
Yeah.
Anyways, and it just started shaking. I'm like, oh, okay.
First earthquake when I came out here, because my roommates at the time, I was in film school, and they were playing some really loud bass music in the living room.
Mm-hmm.
And I came out to my room and was like, hey guys, can you turn it down a little bit? I'm doing some work in here. They're like, yeah, sure. So I go back in my room, and the whole thing just starts vibrating. I went up, I was like, what are you guys doing? They're like, the TV's not on, bro. I was like, what is going on?
Yeah.
What is happening?
Because we have hurricanes back home.
That's right.
We don't have earthquakes. Yeah. So when the ground moves, we're like,
it's a little different.
What do you do?
It's a little different.
Right.
It's a little different. It's really interesting, too, because I have a lot of friends from out of town as well, and they're like, I haven't had an earthquake yet. I'm like, scared. I'm like, honestly, it's more fun than anything until the big one comes and takes us all. But up until that point, it's pretty fun.
Because it's also,
where California gets his own island.
Exactly.
It's almost, because I remember,
escape from L.A. all over.
Right. I was working at this rich old folks' home years ago, and I was on break, and all of a sudden, just the whole place started shaking. And all the housekeepers, they were all running around. And I was just sitting there. I was like, what do you do? I didn't even know what to do. I was just like, I just froze. I was like, nothing falls on me.
Yeah. My first instinct was to go outside. And then my friend was like, don't do it. That's because you're going to be in a stairwell or something like that. Or that's worse.
You're going to get tripped up on the way to outside.
This is the
problem. I think the original thing is you're supposed to stand in a doorway because that's the strongest part in the room.
Archways.
Yeah.
I don't know who's skinny enough to only survive from being in
gotta be,
the doorway.
Get real, suck it in real
right.
tight. Get real skinny. In school, they used to teach us the duck and cover, right? Like, you go under your desk, and then you cover yourself as if that's going to protect you
from a
beam falling down.
Right. It's the same in the 50s when they were teaching kids, oh, you have to duck under your desk in case of a nuclear blast.
Nuclear blast. That's gonna
do absolutely nothing.
Yeah. It makes
or
them
hide in a refrigerator. Remember?
Right.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Rainy and exactly. Yeah. I remember watching that with my, who's a chemist, and he was like, what? I was like, what do you mean? He goes, I don't understand what just happened. I was like, what do you mean? He got into the refrigerator and exploded. He goes, I'm not blind. I just don't get what's happening here.
That was the moment I was like, oh no, this one's not going to be it.
It's just security theater. That's all it is.
Yeah.
So since you're here, So you lived in LA your whole life. Is this what got you into the acting bug here?
Honestly, it was just having a healthy interest in TV and film growing up. My parents loved movies. My family, cousins that are like 15 years older than me, they loved movies and music. So my whole family is huge in media, music and film. They're not in the industry at all, but they're just avid lovers of it.
They're just big connoisseurs. They like taking in all 100%. Stuff.
And so the conversation for you to be an actor was probably a pretty smooth one, no?
There wasn't even a conversation. My parents, I won the lotto with my immediate family, with my parents and my sister, just utterly supportive no matter what and no matter what's going on, just constant support. And that just led to me being able to do whatever I want to do, and they'll have my back. So
that's fantastic. Yeah, you know, we don't get a lot of those stories around here.
Yeah,
that's
granted.
Great.
I do have my quote unquote backup, so yeah. I did go. So they weren't worried no matter what I did, but I still played a safe route. Went to college, got my degree, got my
what did you get a degree
job.
In?
I'm a software engineer. So
so that's why they're so okay with it. You have something to fall back
that
on.
That is true, just in case. But I had expressed the interest long before when I was a kid growing up. Oh, I want to be an actor. I want to do this. I want to do that. I did when I was in like elementary school, middle school, but then
The
stopped.
Mandatory theater.
Yes, exactly. No, well, the plays. You didn't have to be in the plays and stuff
all
the time. But I did those and then got into sports when I was in middle school, switched over there.
What'd you
but
play?
But the interest, baseball and football.
Oh.
And then
positions did you play?
Baseball.
You're kind of tall. You weren't a lineman, were you?
No, I was not a lineman. No.
I was a wide
skinny.
Receiver, huh?
I was a receiver and a cornerback. I was better at a corner. For baseball, I was left field and second base.
Yeah, there's a reason there's no white cornerbacks.
Hey.
You said it.
Hey.
It's like, but, hey, man, you want to play quarterback?
Yeah.
So then when you got into high school, what happened then?
High school, just actually that's when I ended up joining a band and toured a little bit with a hardcore metal band.
Like, I was about to say, I thought you were, I didn't know if you were talking about like a band or the band, which is in school.
Because Nicholas played in the band.
Yeah, I played in the band.
Which instrument?
I played trumpet.
Okay, I like trumpets. Yeah. Dope.
Everybody was hating on the trumpets because we got all the cool parts.
Trumpet's dope. I enjoy trumpet. But yeah, so I played guitar and bass and toured my metal band in high school. So I took that shift and then went to college, got busy with life in college as one kind of
sounds like you've just
in.
Been pivoting your whole life.
I've been doing
this guy's been sandboxing. I'm gonna do whatever I want to do.
Yeah, that's 100% what it's been like. Just trying everything that I seem to enjoy and trying my best at it, and then seeing what sticks. Basically, post college was when I took acting seriously.
Where did you go to college?
UC Irvine down in Orange County.
Okay,
nice.
Yep. How did
you like that?
Oh, it was great. UCI is a beautiful campus. It's one of the best schools out here and one of the top schools for computer science. It was just a great experience. Loved it. Wasn't a struggle for me, thankfully. Because
you were just that smart. You were just like,
I am a computer nerd, 100%. Yeah,
let me get my hour of studying in and then I can go party.
Pretty much how it worked out. That's also when I got into dancing, luck. Too. So I started b-boying in college, too.
Oh, dude. Yeah. I was a pro break dancer.
Oh,
yeah,
nice.
Yeah, really, my early years in college. When I was 18, 19, and 20, I was a pro break dancer.
Oh, sick.
And
which crew were you in?
I was in Volatomics. Shout out to Knoxville.
Okay.
That's our hood. Right? That's our...
Hey. Okay.
All right.
You don't know nothing about that?
Yeah.
I don't. I'm not familiar with the crews in Tennessee.
We're a local crew there. And if you ever get the chance, if you like that whole scene, the b-boy scene still, you got to check out...
Rocket Town,
Nashville, okay. Rocket Town.
All right.
I remember my parents did not want me to go to one of our breaking tours because, I don't know, for something about studying. I actually don't remember. It was something about my grades, even though I never had bad grades. But they were like, oh, your grades might drop. So I remember being like, okay, cool. I won't go. And then immediately going to my BY mates. I'm like, okay, so we're going. Just no one posts me on social media and I'll get away with this.
Yeah, right? Definitely.
And I remember they called me. This is right before. So we're pulling up on Rocket Town because they're having one of the tournaments there.
Okay.
And they called me and they're like, hey, DJ, what are you doing? I was like, nothing. They're like, it sounds like there's a lot of hip hop music. And I was like, yeah, I saw that. I listen to while I'm studying. And they're like, you're studying to Biggie? Yep. I'm just like Hardball. That's me. They got to pass this grade.
Yep.
B-boying is great. So then you took acting more seriously afterwards. What made you decide that, okay, now I'm have done a whole bunch of other stuff. What made you be like, oh, I'm just going to go for it now?
So I was trying to be a music producer after college as well. And so I was doing that at the same time as taking classes, like simple classes for acting, not just like dipping my toes in. Mm-hmm. And decided, you know what, I'm going to go full bore into acting as well as music production, just because I had the time and the ability to. So I did both. And then one fateful trip to Vegas, I brought my, and after, so long story short, had a bunch of music, made a bunch of music, external hard drive dies, waiting to buy a new one. I take my laptop that has the original copies to Vegas, and we're in Vegas, and my laptop gets stolen out of our room.
Whoa!
All of your music?
So all of my music is gone.
No! Like, the originals are gone.
All the originals are gone.
Oh,
These are the days before Google Drive was active. There was, like, very simple things back then that I didn't use because neglectful.
So,
and I was like, I'm not going to go back and do all of this again. We're just going to try acting completely. So I went full-time into acting.
The man was like, I told you no the first time. Yeah. Now I'm really saying no.
This man has done everything. Next, I'm going to prove the theory of everything.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So I went full bore into it, did all the classes you're supposed to, quote unquote, in LA and stuff, kind of building up that resume. Got my first agent, commercial agent, and then slowly built myself from there. Life takes on a mind of its own sometimes, and that's when things veer off course here and there. So it was like on and off for 10 years, taking classes here and there. And then one day on a music video shoot that I was on, I was like, I was out of class at this point. And I was like feeling, oh, I'm losing it. My craft is lacking. Something's wrong. Something's bad. I need to hop back in. And one of the buddies that I made on this music video turned me on to his teacher, Joshua Baton, who is a stellar working actor, but also amazing acting teacher. And so I got turned on to him, went to his class, and basically hopped into a scene study, which turned into a full-on Meisner technique 2-year program, and jumped into that and really cut my teeth in that program and kind of basically learned how to act from there, because this is the second time I did Meisner technique, and this time it actually stuck.
For the audience at home, can you explain what Meisner technique is for them?
So there are several different acting techniques. You got Stanislavski, you got Stella Adler's technique, you got Meisner, a bunch of different ones you can choose from. I just fell into this one, Meisner technique, which was taught by Sanford Meisner in New York. And he bestowed his main students that became the other teachers, like the big teachers that would go on to teach all the Oscar winners of today. Not all, but several Oscar winners of today. And then a plethora of other students, including my mentor, Joshua Baton, same teacher. And so he became a teacher himself and thankfully bestowed his knowledge. And Meisner technique is just another way of, basically the main quote from Meisner's acting, that acting is living truthfully under imaginary circumstances. So that's the whole spiel for Meisner technique, and then trying to break away from what is internalized and what we learn day to day in our daily lives from growing up in society and polite society, whatever society we're in, environments we're living in. We build up these walls and these ways of thinking and acting as if we're talking right now. I'm sitting
right
at a table,
being
and existing in a moment, in any given moment. And so what Meisner technique teaches you is how to break down all those walls and all those barriers, so you're at your rawest form. So you learn how to listen. Number one, listen, really listen to other people and when they talk and when you're in an actual scene, which you even get later, way later in the program. But how to really listen to somebody, and then how to react and respond from a raw, natural point. And then from there, we apply that knowledge and those techniques to a script and learn how to relate ourselves to some words on a page, and then how to react and respond truthfully in the moment to the other person's words on the page and really listen to them and hear them.
Do you have any siblings?
I have one older sister.
One older sister?
Mm-hmm.
The only reason I ask is because it's very funny. A lot of really good actors that I know usually have siblings. And there was an interesting study done by, I think his name's Stephen something like that. He usually does, I like looking at the written reports of like scripts and like data and stuff like that, right? So he had this other data points that he made about actors and actresses. And all the top actors and actresses had siblings. And one of the interviews...
Were they older or younger?
Across the board.
They just had siblings.
They just had
siblings. People to interact with.
Basically, one of his interviews, I forget what actress said this, but she goes, when you have a sibling, you lie to them all the time. It's like, you're pretty good at it. I have three sisters. I'm like, this is pretty accurate.
What an oversimplification of Meisner, no disrespect to it, because I did it for a little bit and I had friends, and it's basically showing you that words are meaningless and that, for example, you would say cardboard, but you would say it over and over again, but it with different tone, different inflection.
No, so that what you're talking about is the repetition exercise, and that's merely an exercise to get you out of your own head and really put your focus on your partner and learn how to listen. That's not Meisner technique. That is a exercise that is taught and used when learning Meisner
technique.
But it's
not the core of the technique.
It is not Meisner technique. That is a piece that you learn in like the first year, and you do that, and it's really to get you out of your own head, out of your own mind, and really listen and pay attention to how someone says something and how you're going to respond to it as well.
Okay.
Being an actor here in LA, first of all, there's a lot of, especially recently, there's been this large whole of like new faces when it comes to movies and television. I used to work in development myself. I know what it feels like when I see a script or see something great and they're just like, oh, cool, call Zendaya. I'm just like,
right.
All right.
It's funny you mention her, because one of the other younger actresses on Euphoria had just complained how she hadn't booked a single thing while Zendaya is out booking every movie known to man and making all this money and making all these things while Euphoria is on hold because she's off doing everything else. And then this other actress hasn't booked anything because it's tough out there, even for an actress that's on Euphoria. But she can't do anything about it while the Zendayas of the world are off doing their own thing and then holding up production. I don't know if she's actively holding up production, but that's what the actress made it seem like.
This is actually a pretty good segue, because when I was working in development, you have this thing where basically they don't like to take chances as much anymore. It's not even like about taking chances. It's more they're just lazy, right? And by they, some Hollywood
execs. The powers that be.
Yeah. Because a lot of them will just say, oh, I know who this actor is. Okay, yeah, just green light it without even needing to look at it. Compared to, oh, here's an actor, here's a project. Do you mind stepping out of your ivory tower and actually looking at what's going on?
Yeah.
And when I worked in development, a lot of times it would say, the first two questions, I think I said this before, is it paid for, aka, do we have to put up any money? Mm-hmm. Which you usually always have to, but they ask anyway for some reason. And then also, who's in it?
Yeah.
And a lot of times they would count numbers. They'd be like, okay, here's how many new faces we'll put in there. Mm-hmm. Here's how many A-listers or whatever.
Yeah.
And the new faces get shorter, smaller, and smaller.
Yep.
So because you're a working actor, right, what do you think is going to be able to cause that change for them to take this risk of more new people again? Because in the 90s, it seemed like they were able to take more risk on newer directors, newer writers, newer actors. And some people argue because of DVD sales, but it was just...
What makes you think they did it more in the 90s?
I would say that they put them more on the front page, I guess I would say. Because comparative to the 70s and 80s, things were like there's always been quote-unquote movie stars.
Yeah.
But in the 90s, there was a huge push. There was also a huge change in technology when it came to film then being able to change to digital. Quote unquote digital being on tape. So there was an argument there that, oh, it's because technology changed that allowed it to get more indie hands. Quentin Tarantino, I wouldn't exactly say is exactly indie, but for the most part, he did help pioneer certain things.
Yeah, him and Robert Rodriguez. Yeah.
Yeah.
A lot of people cut their bones in the indie world first. And I don't think, just right off the bat, I don't think we're giving new faces any less of a chance today than as in the 90s, just by sheer numbers alone, because we have so much more content now that new faces are being seen across the board way more than they were in the 90s. It's just a fact, because we have thousands more programs and things to cast people. Yeah, because there's a huge amount of surplus. We have a surplus of opportunities. Whether or not that's good or bad, I don't know, because that's when you start seeing more bad programs and then good programs, because there's so much more.
Don't you think it makes the good programs look better, though? For example, if I had one really good program and then two bad ones, it's okay, this one's just better than the rest, comparative to if you have a good program and then there's 1,000 bad ones. It's, wow, this one must be really awesome.
Maybe, but at the same time, I feel like why even have that comparison? Why is it necessary to have a bad program in the first place? I get that there's an audience for everything, and mm-hmm. I love that. And I love that there's movies you could just put on while you're doing the dishes and hear it and just enjoy it.
Not everything needs to be The Godfather.
Not everything needs to be The Godfather, and I love that, and that's great. So there is a place for all kinds of different content, no matter what it is. And believe me, I'm in it. Yeah.
Me and DJ were talking about this, and we've talked to people at Warner Brothers and Universal and stuff like that. And basically, because we were talking to somebody, and we were actually honest with him. We were like, "Hey, man, why does this bad stuff?" He was like, "Why some of that bad stuff gets done and why it gets created?" He said, "Because the studios literally just want to keep their name out there.
That's a big part.
They literally just want their name out there and it for it to be known. It doesn't matter if it's bad or not. They just want people to know that." Universal is still making movies and TV shows. It doesn't matter if it's good. It 100%. Doesn't matter if it's bad. 100%. They just want it to stay in their
mouth. Yeah,
you know,
yeah, that's a big thing.
Thousands of stuff every year.
Yeah, 100%. Like the movie that I just did that just released on Tubi in December or January called Prepare to Die. Just slipping that in real quick. So it was co-produced by Tubi and Asylum. So now
it's Asylum.
Yeah. So Asylum is the producers of Sharknado.
Yeah.
Among a bunch of other mockbusters, as they call them. Mm-hmm. And they like to turn out movies constantly.
I worked on several of the movies. I worked on Planet Dune. There's
my other friend was on that too.
Yeah, there's like an Atlantis movie that they had that I worked on. It was something to Atlantis, the Robin Hood, the second grade. And you're correct. They really be pumping
out those movies. They churn out movies. So whether or not you feel like they're quality content, they have audiences and they're being watched and they make money off of it.
Because like Atlantic Rim.
Atlantic Rim, yes. Yeah. If they didn't make money, they wouldn't make these. So that's their prerogative. It's a lot to do with the business. So when we go back to your original question about why don't we think we're seeing new faces or people aren't taking a chance on new faces, I think they are. It's always about the business. For the people that make the decisions, for especially the big known companies, it's all about the business, the bottom line, and they need to have faces. They need to have names no matter what. Right. And until those faces and names that are immediately marketable and they're going to make bankable is, I think, the proper term.
Yeah. Right.
For instance, the movie that I made, we had to have names. They're not huge names or anything, but they're names nonetheless.
Right. And you can search them on IMDb.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. You'll
look
them
up. They come up. That's a person.
Like Michael Madsen was in my movie. Michael Madsen from Tarantino movies and stuff and all kinds of other things.
I think what's happening is there's a transition of the windows, right? Yeah. So there's always been a set of windows for 40 years of, okay, it's going to go here, it's going to go here, it's going to go here, and it's going to take a full 12 months for all the windows and everybody to make their money.
And then after that, we're going to ship it off to DVD. Then we're going to make it, we're going to act like the DVD is not available. Then we're going to make the new one with DVD with the commentary.
Yep.
So the thing is, with streaming, all of those windows disappear.
Yeah, so the windows you're talking about, avenues of making money. Profitable avenues, got it. Okay, so that disappeared.
Just
so much revenue across the board.
It just goes straight to streaming.
Which is why we're also in this kind of cyclical nature where now we're going back to regular cable again. Like we got rid of cable and streaming is here, and now we're going back to basically what cable was, except way more expensive because I have to pay for 5 services that all have commercials again.
Netflix is going to put commercials back on. Hulu.
Amazon already has commercials. Yeah. Hulu's had commercials for ages.
That's the only thing I can't complain with Hulu. At least Hulu's had commercials.
Yeah, Hulu's had commercials. Right. You know what's dope about Tubi? Because I never really used Tubi until my movie came out. It's free. There's commercials. Less than like Hulu and less than cable, and you get all these like cool classic movies and stuff.
Have you ever heard of Crackle?
Yeah, I have heard of Crackle. I haven't used it, but I know Crackle.
Yeah,
I
watched about the same thing.
Yeah,
right?
I saw Super Mansion when it first came out because I liked Robot Chicken a lot.
Okay.
Seth Green made a show called Super Mansion.
Okay.
And I was like, dude, Seth Green keeps all stop motion people in business. Seth Green is
that's great. But he has a passion and he's good at it.
So I think that's what the deal is. You have the institutions still want to act like it's the 9 to 12 month windows of, it's going to go here, it's going to go here, it's going to go, and it's going to take.
This whole waterfall model of making money off
and
of one project.
That was completely smashed when streaming came out.
Yeah, streaming was the big disruption for the industry. And then it continues to be. And then as we saw with the SAG strike last year, that it has so much more to deal with and contend with, especially when it comes to our talent.
How
do
you feel about the... So first of all, I'm not going
to
act like the strike was over one thing, because it wasn't. It was over a bunch of stuff.
It's a bunch of things.
But especially when it was going on. So me and Nicholas were out there picketing. We started picketing when the WGA was there, and then when SAG joined, it was got a lot bigger.
Yeah.
However, one thing that I always like to ask actors, what did you think about them saying, oh, you know what? We're just going to scan you and then pay you once and then use your body
in perpetuity. Yeah. Your likeness utterly nonsense. I learned this early on because just coming from like non-union commercials, you have these kind of projects where they can use your footage, your photos forever in perpetuity. Yeah. You learn
throughout
that phrase.
Throughout the universe, right. Yes. They always say throughout the universe because apparently they have some outlets in Saturn.
Yeah, exactly. They got some moons over Jupiter that are playing your commercial right now. Yeah, you learn that phrase real fast coming up in that world and hopefully not through anything negative. But you learn in perpetuity, stay away from that. You're getting paid $300 to be in this commercial or whatever, photo shoot, and they get to use it forever and ever. So if you become, quote, fingers crossed for everybody, if you become the next Brad Pitt, the next Emma Stone, they can still use your likeness or whatever from ages ago.
They're going to play that commercial.
Exactly, which happened to, what's his name, Shang-Chi, actor that played Shang-Chi.
Oh,
and he had those, like, stock photos that when Shang-Chi came out.
Yeah, when he was used to be a model when he was stock photos.
Yeah, when he was still a younger actor and he did a stock photo shoot because that was money, that was a gig, that was a project, and they get to use it forever.
They're blasting it everywhere.
Yeah, exactly.
Which is insane because they upped the prices on using those stock photos because it's him.
Immediately, 100%.
It's so ridiculous, especially because I went to the HPA Awards. And I usually go every year. I try to go. Obviously, it wasn't in 2020. There was nothing in 2020.
Right.
But I like talking to a lot of different editors. And one thing that they said, especially last year, they were like, do they not understand that, let's say hypothetically, actors agreed to this. Hypothetically. Mm. Okay, they agreed to them being scanned and using their likeness, which wouldn't happen, but hypothetically. They do realize then now the visual effects department and like the editing team then has to go back and make it seem like that fictional 3D model of them is realistic in the background.
Yeah.
It's still time and money being wasted.
That is, yeah.
It just shifts the industry.
Yeah, but it's also not paying you for your time. They could have used you as a body to get it real, and now they're still saving money because they're going to save money down in the long run because now they have talent.
First of all, they don't have to pay you for usage. They're already paying the editor to do what he's doing. So it's not really adding to that, but it's like adding time still. Like the work still needs to get done, but they don't care.
We were actually interviewing a production designer who works in China, and she was talking about how using real world footage, like furniture and stuff like that, was so much cheaper than trying to CGI it.
Oh, yeah.
Because they're in China.
It is and it isn't. Because nowadays, CG is getting so crazy and so, what's the word?
Advanced?
Yeah, advanced, but you're able to get your hands on it and learn it. And
she was talking specifically a little bit, it's a little bit different than here in America, because she was talking specifically about the way it is in China.
Yeah.
Right. Because so many things are made in China that apparently it is literally cheaper to just get it from the factory and film it.
Yeah.
She's saying that it's only like that in China.
In China
specifically, yeah. But yeah, because like here in America, I was pulling up my friend or a guy that I know, Brian Tang, on IG, who made a couple films on his own. And he made this amazing with his whole crew and everything, but he is also a visual effects, like honestly genius. He does it all himself. And he created this whole pod racer trailer for a movie, the pod racing scenes from
Star Wars.
So he made an entire theatrical trailer based on Pod Racer, and it looks straight up Lucasfilm level, and it's all his own CGI that he did. I'm sure he had some help from a couple other people, but no effects houses, nobody else. Him and his room doing these crazy visual effects. So it is so accessible. I don't know why I couldn't think of that earlier.
Oh, accessible.
Applicable? That's not right. So accessible nowadays that here and there, it depends on what you want, but creating a little robot to stand there and then maybe move a little bit could look better, but I don't think it's cheaper than doing a CGI little robot and making it look real, because there's evidence out there that people could do this in their bedrooms now.
That's true.
Which is crazy.
One thing you watch Corridor Crew?
Yeah, I love Corridor
Crew. Corridor Crew is awesome.
VFX artists every weekend, man. Every weekend.
They're great. So awesome. One thing.
My dude Guy Da Silva goes on their couch sometimes, does, because he's a stunt guy, so he does stuntman react.
Do you prefer to do stunts?
No, I'm an actor. Just straight up. I love my stunt people. My girlfriend does stunts. I love my stunt people. They are the most talented people ever, and they deserve that freaking Oscar, guys.
Yeah.
But no, I'm not a stunt man. No, I'm an actual. Let them do the thing,
yeah,
and I'll pretend on camera.
Do you like to do a lot of your own stunts?
I would love to, and as much as I can, that looks good, I can. Like in my movie, I did all my own stunts, mostly because I had to, because there was no money.
Mm.
But we also did fight scenes on the fly and on the day, and developed things around each character's abilities. So thankfully I do have martial arts background. I do stunts as like physically.
Like, say that it doesn't cost extra money for you to have good choreography.
Exactly.
Yeah. You know? How do you know that you shouldn't do this stunt? What goes through your head that you're like, I'm gonna let the stunt man?
I haven't encountered that in my career yet. I hope to. That'd be amazing. Oh, hell no, I'm not doing that.
So any Mission Impossible movie?
Oh no, it depends, because that is a whole goal of mine. No matter what you think about Tom Cruise, he is one of the most talented people on the planet.
Oh God, I see him hanging. I love Mission Impossible movies. They're
cool. Fallout is my favorite action movie.
Oh my gosh, all time. It's so good.
I think
good.
It's because it was just a great movie and the action is phenomenal, and the story was really good, and the acting was really good. But anyways.
To be fair, I have to be honest. I am what they call action trash. If it is action, I will see it. But I do love
same.
That movie.
Same. No, I will too. You I love a good popcorn movie, man. I just rewatched Face Off. Oh, epic.
Oh, Face Off is great.
And Con Air. I was on a 90s kick.
One of the things that I think is so crazy is that people who go to work with Tom Cruise on Mission Impossible are amazed at the crazy stuff they have to do.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Have you not seen?
Yeah. Did you not do this? They didn't know.
This is right. Like the fifth Mission Impossible. Yeah. How are you surprised?
Bigger and better, man, every time.
My favorite
How are
favorite
you surprised that
stunt.
You have to jump off a mountain or something?
Yeah. Yeah. Like, my favorite stunt is when he clings to the side of that plane.
That was a cool one.
Yeah, and I was like, I remember seeing that in the theaters. Man, I know he likes to do practicals, but this looks really practical.
It's like, really good. It's really good.
Yeah.
People I mean, he like, was Tom, outside of a plane.
Yeah.
People are like, Tom Cruise has a death wish and wants to die on set. Because they're like, the crazy part about Tom Cruise is that if the stunt coordinator thinks the stunt is too dangerous, he just fires that coordinator.
And gets a new stunt coordinator.
And gets a new stunt coordinator.
I saw that Matt Damon interview too.
And says, how do we do this? And he says, please, because remember, I'll just fire you and get somebody else. Because this stunt is going to get done.
Well, it's going to happen. Yeah, to answer your question, I think it would just be fear would make my decision for me if I'm too afraid.
What is a stunt that you've seen that you're like, oh, I think that would be cool to at least try?
Honestly, everything from this last stunt, from the last Mission Impossible is for sure. I love the helicopter sequence. I would love to fly a helicopter and do crazy stunt flying.
I like the
that.
Part where he goes out the train and hits the glider.
Oh, yeah. What are you talking about? There's a bunch of good ones. What I don't want to do, I don't want to get thrown down some stairs. I don't want to fall down some stairs. Keanu Reeves is another. I don't want to get hit by cars. Do that. Stunt guys can do that. Keanu Reeves is amazing. Like, he did so much of his own stuff on all the John Wicks, and I'm friends with stunt guys that worked on that and stuff, and just seeing the behind the scenes and talking to him about it, it's just insane. But he is apparently... It's getting to him, and I don't want it to
this
get to me either.
Real. Those
he is
gun scenes
crazy,
are like, because the video came out of him and his gun skills, and everybody's like, oh, he really is like
it. Oh, he's super talented. So there's a line in there, too, because he doesn't do everything. He has his doubles and everybody, and I would do the same thing. But yeah, certain things like that, I don't want to roll down some stairs. Maybe a few stairs, sure. Not thrown down doing a flip over. I have one of my friends in the last John Wick, there's an escalator, and he gets thrown. He flies and lands like 12 feet down the escalator, lands, and then tumbles down the escalator. That was my friend on that scene.
Yeah.
And I'm like, nope.
No way.
Couldn't be me.
Nope, right. Not me. Yeah, that kind of stuff, no. Fight scenes, I'd love to do. Yeah, just, it really depends. It's a case-by-case basis. I don't want to get blown up.
I think that's fair.
Maybe get lit on fire. That sounds like fun, actually.
Well, shot?
Shot, yeah, that's nothing. That's easy. And most of that's CGI now, anyways. They just comp in some bullets and impacts.
Yeah. Well, Ryan, it's been really great to have you on the show, man. Is there somewhere people can follow you?
Yeah, you can follow me on Instagram at @OhMyIt'sRyan. And yeah, feel free to message me if you ever want to chat about acting or anything.
Cool. Thank you so much. Guys, this has been Film Center. I'm Derek Johnson II.
I'm Nicholas Killian.
And we're here with
Ryan Padilla.
And we'll see you next time.
See ya.
See ya.
This has been Film Center on Comic-Con Radio. Check out our previous episodes at ComicConRadio.com. You can follow the show at Film Center News on all major social media platforms. Tune in next Wednesday for a fresh update. Until next time, this has been Film Center.